Good morning. Welcome to the Civil Law and Data Practices Committee for April 12th. The first order of business this morning would be to approve the minutes of April 7th. Representative Vogel, have you had the opportunity to look at the minutes?
Yes. I move the minutes.
Thank you. The minutes have been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the minutes of April 7th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Welcome again, everyone, to the committee. This morning, we're going to be hearing two bills. The first one will be informational, and the second one is also sort of informational. It just has to be heard in the Civil Law Committee and discussed, and then it will be going on to the claims, the full claims committee this evening, as I understand it. And so the plan of action today, we are going to have a very respectful dialogue here this morning. It's important for the state of Minnesota to have this discussion. And so we're going to have a respectful dialogue. What we're going to do is the proponents are going to go first, and they're going to have 30 minutes. And then the opponents will go. They will have 30 minutes. Each person will come to the testifiers table, announce your name. And if you're with an organization, whatever, you can do that. If you're just a private citizen, just announce your name. And you will be given two minutes. My lovely assistant here, Alex, has a couple of signs he's going to be holding up, one for the 30-second warning and one for the stop. And so please be respectful of the time, because if we get to the end of 30 minutes and someone else has taken too much time, it may affect the person at the bottom not even being able to be heard today. So the point, what we want to do is to go through the testimony, and then at the end of that hour, after both sides have presented their arguments or their discussion, we will have 15 minutes for member questions. And then at the end of that, we will move on to Representative Murphy's bill. So with that, Representative Gruenhagen, you have House File 3396, and it's before us just as an informational basis only. Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Thanks for the opportunity of having a discussion on this bill. This bill is titled the Individual Right to Privacy and Safety in Public Accommodations Act. This bill pertains to human rights, clarifying certain provisions in the Human Rights Act, which governs biological-specific accommodations. They amend Minnesota Statutes 363A and certain subdivisions. This bill protects the privacy and public safety of adults and young people, both in our society and schools. The bill originated from a constituent of mine who works in the metro area. This is her testimony. At her place of employment, a man declared himself to be a woman this past year and informed the employer that he had decided to use the women's restroom. Both of these individuals were longtime employees of this company. The employer decided not to object, and the man began to use the women's restroom. This, according to my female constituent, caused great anxiety, discomfort, and fear for her and other women. They complained to an employer, and the remedy was to tape the cracks shut in the bathroom stalls to prevent anyone from seeing in. Needless to say, this did not alleviate the fears or discomfort of the female employees. These women are now using a restroom in another building in order to protect their safety and privacy. My constituent is afraid to protest too much because she believes her job would be at risk. This bill is necessary after the Minnesota Supreme Court decision in 2001, Goins versus Westgroup, which dealt with the subject of individuals using public accommodations of their choice rather than the traditionally assigned accommodations based on their biological sex. The bill uses sexual orientation as defined in Minnesota law and ensures that anyone, whether gay, straight, or transgender, may use a restroom, shower, or dressing room based on their biological sex, which is the only objective method of preserving safety and privacy of all. The bill provides exceptions for small children accompanying an opposite-sex parent, also exceptions for disabled people accompanying an opposite-sex caregiver, It also provides exceptions for emergency personnel and maintenance personnel. It could also cover an opposite-sex person in a bona fide emergency, which could include emergency incontinence, where no bathroom is otherwise available. Single stall occupancy is also an additional exception. At this time, I have a series of testifiers who will testify in three areas. First, by parents and individuals who are concerned about the privacy and safety of their children. Second, of how the Minnesota Department of Education is promoting gender fluidity policies to our school board, and in many cases using false information about the Minnesota Human Rights Act and also federal laws to force that policy onto school districts, along with the curriculum that's being promoted down into the kindergarten level, which, by the way, I provided you a packet of information which documents the comments I've made. And finally, I have several lawyers here to address the Goins versus West Group decision, and also Title IX and other federal laws that do not require schools to adopt a gender fluidity policy, which unfortunately they're being told in some cases by the Minnesota Department of Education. So those are the three areas we're going to address. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to call my first witness.
Please do.
Emily Zenos, can she come forward? And Kate Ives would be on deck. Kate, if you want to come up and sit in the next chair. Try to keep your testimonies to 2 minutes, as we have quite a few people to testify.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Emily Zenos. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here out of concern for the privacy and safety of all Minnesota children. I have 5 children attending schools in Minnesota. Every day, parents like me across this state entrust their children to grade schools and high schools that they've carefully chosen for a myriad of reasons, including excellent curriculum, high standards for behavior, and talented teachers. But underscoring the selection of a school is the assumption that basic safety and privacy will be provided to our children so that they can learn and thrive. All children, gender nonconforming or not, need to have access to bathrooms and locker rooms that are safe when they're at school. The public school that I chose for my children is currently considering a policy that would allow anyone to use whatever bathroom they want. Though the proposed policy states that students, quote, shall be granted access to restrooms, locker rooms, and changing areas that align with the student's gender identity consistently asserted at school, the policy also states that gender identity is an internal construct not necessarily visible to others, and that the manner in which an individual chooses to express one's gender identity to others through behavior, clothing, hairstyle, body language, and mannerisms may change over time and may or may not conform to one's gender identity. This contradictory language tells me that students must consistently look like a boy to use the boys' bathroom, but at the same time, the school can't make any judgments based on appearances. The net result is that anyone can use any bathroom or locker room that they choose. And that's a situation ripe for abuse by those who have the intention of harming children. Further, the introduction of this policy and its implications have torn this school apart. A number of families have left mid-year.
Please conclude your remarks. We're trying to keep to the...
Yes.
Thank you.
All children, including gender nonconforming children, are put in harm's way when bathrooms are mixed. Schools all across the state need common sense legislation to guide them in creating bathroom policies, because parents like me need to trust that schools will safeguard their children's privacy. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next testifier, thank you for being here.
Julie Quist on deck, after Kate.
Go ahead, Kate.
Hello, thank you. My name is Kate Ives, and I'm here to share my story and to show you how what is happening with this practice and how it impacts women and children. No one is listening to us. We are being told that we do not matter, that our privacy and safety are not worth protecting. However, I do believe that we also deserve equal rights. We deserve compassion and protection, and therefore we need you to listen to us, stand up for us, and protect us. I want to, before I say anything else, I need to clarify this, because as soon as somebody knows that I am not comfortable with this practice, I am being called transphobic or a hater of trans people or that I want to harm them. None of that is true at all. That is not the case. Never has been. Trans people are not the threat. I am trying to be sensitive to their feelings, but I don't believe that I need to relinquish my right to safety and privacy. There are no safeguards in place in allowing biological males into our women's bathrooms and restrooms. This is giving a free pass to countless deviant men to come and victimize, exploit women and children. This is happening. There are cases all over the news. I know you were given some this morning in that folder. I just want to point out the flawed logic. I am not against trans people because I want my safety protected. Over the last summer, I encountered a biological male standing in the women's locker room watching women shower and typing on his phone. I went to my health club, to the staff members there, to report this, and I was told that they assume this person is a harmless transgender person and therefore he has every right to be there. My privacy concerns, my safety concerns have not even been acknowledged.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Quist.
Gary Swenson would be on deck.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go on with your testimony.
My name is Julie Quist and I'm with the Child Protection League. I'm going to read a testimony from a parent in Virginia, Minnesota, who is not able to be here. She says, on Wednesday, February 10th, and this is Cindy Hohenstein, a parent from Virginia, a 15-year-old boy who claims to be a girl walked into the girls' locker room and while clearly looking around at five girls who were already undressing, began to undress himself in front of them, pulling off his pants and shirt. The five girls who were in various states of undress for basketball practice, some without shirts or shorts, were shocked and upset by the boy's actions, and they felt unsafe. So they quickly retreated into the restroom to complete changing their clothes. The boy tried to do it again 2 days later, but was prevented by one of the girl's boyfriends who stood in his way. Parents who lodged complaints with the administration were told that the district is required by law to allow the boy to use the girls' bathroom and locker rooms. A complaint was filed with the police, but no action was taken to protect our children. A district elementary teacher reported that she was told by the administration that she was required to allow her students to use opposite sex restrooms if they identified as the other sex. A female elementary student has even been told to use the boys' bathroom simply because she likes to do boy things and prefers pants to dresses, and they claim the law requires it. The same boy who has been allowed to be a member of the girls' basketball team and the girls' marching band has also demanded to sleep in the same hotel rooms with girls on band trips, but has so far been denied. We need this legislation to protect our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Next testifier, please state your name for the record and continue on with your testimony. Representative Grunhagen, who's next?
Jim Ballatin.
Okay. Go ahead. Okay,
hi, my name is Gary Swenson. I'm from the Newland Spicer School District, and I was did not have time to prepare remarks. We had a meeting last night with the school board, and that was packed with individuals from around the state testifying. Anyway, we were alerted to this about 2 months ago when the Department of Education, a gal from the name of Amy Marsicano, brought out two people from Minneapolis. One was from Families Transforming, or Transforming Families, and the other one was from another pro gay group, I can't remember what the name of it is, Upfront Minnesota. It was represented by Rox Anderson. And they come out and they had a workshop for the teachers about LGBTQ students and how to address them. And after that was done, then they come with this transgender policy that the whole community has been up in arms about. There's been a poll in the Tribune that 80% of the people are against this. And we found it alarming that the Department of Education would be promoting this kind of thing. So so anyway, we're trying to get a handle on this. We're trying to get the school. You can tell the school board is under pressure. They feel they're under pressure to adopt a policy that the community is against. So thank you for your testimony and time.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just a follow-up note. In the packet I handed out to members, copies of a curriculum down to the elementary level that's being promoted in Minnesota schools, along with the policy that Gary referenced, is in there. And also a article about the person from the Minnesota Department of Education that was out at the New London Spicer School District promoting this narrative.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony, please.
Thank you. Madam Chair, committee, my name is Jim Ballantyne. I live in Falcon Heights. I'm a litigator, and I'm a volunteer attorney with the North Star Law and Policy Center. I would like to focus my testimony this morning on the goal of this bill to protect the privacy and health of every student in our state's public schools. This goal of protecting privacy and health of every student is good policy for three reasons. First of all, schools should respect and protect the physical privacy and health of every student entrusted to their care. Bodily privacy is an established constitutional right. Last year, a federal court stated, quote, "Not only is bodily privacy a constitutional right, the need for privacy is even more pronounced in the state educational system," close quotes. The presence of a member of the opposite sex in a restroom or locker room immediately violates the bodily privacy rights of every other person in that facility. It does not matter whether a boy self-identifies as a girl. Our own Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals held that a transgender individual's use of a women's restroom threatened female privacy. Second, Minnesota law already confirms that ensuring single-sex access to restrooms and locker rooms is not discrimination. We are against any type of discrimination. Minnesota law already confirms that it is not discrimination to ensure single-sex access to restrooms and locker rooms. The Minnesota Human Rights Act specifically states already that it is not discrimination in a public accommodation to restrict facility use based on biological sex. This statute will simply back that up. Thirdly, federal courts have confirmed that ensuring single-sex access to restrooms and locker rooms is an important government interest and does not violate Title IX. This statute will not violate Title IX. Title IX does not require what the other side is proposing, and we're asking that you vote yes on this bill.
Thank you for your testimony.
Melissa Coleman on deck.
Welcome to the committee. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. Marjorie Holston speaking as an attorney, a private citizen, and a parent. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee today in support of House File 3396. I'd like to focus my testimony this morning on the goal of HF 3396 to protect two fundamental rights. Those are, number one, the religious freedom rights of every student in our state's public schools, and number two, the rights of parents to direct the upbringing of their children. The First Amendment to the United States Constitution lists six forms of protected expression, which include respecting the establishment of religion and not prohibiting the free exercise thereof, and also protecting the right of the people to peaceably assemble, which we call freedom of association, which includes the right not to associate with people, including those of the opposite sex, in an intimate setting. The 14th Amendment makes the First Amendment binding on all the states. In addition, Minnesota's Constitution protects religious freedom. Specifically, Article 1, Section 16 of Minnesota's Constitution provides in relevant part the right of every man to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience shall never be infringed. Minnesota Supreme Court has recognized that the Minnesota Constitution provides even stronger protections for religious liberty than does the U.S. Constitution. In the interest of time, I'm not going to have cites to cases, but I can provide those upon request. The U.S. Supreme Court has recognized that students do not shed their constitutional rights when they enter the school. HF 3396 protects the religious freedom rights of students. Many religious students, including those of Christian, Jewish, and Muslim faiths, believe it is immoral to commingle with members of the opposite sex while engaging in private activities like using restrooms, bathing, or changing clothes. These students are precluded by religious-based modesty principles from sharing restrooms, locker rooms, or shower rooms with members of the opposite sex. Stop already?
2 minutes goes by quickly.
So,
you close your remarks.
Parents have rights to direct the upbringing of their children, so I'd like to support HF 3396 as a necessary tool to protect the religious freedom rights of students, to protect the rights of parents to direct the upbringing of their children, and to shield schools from lawsuits that they will face for violating these fundamental rights.
Thank you for your testimony.
Ann Taylor would be on deck. This is Melissa Coleman. I would, Madam Chair, she has some legal points to make, and I would ask for just a couple additional minutes. I think I'm well within my time, so I'd like to delegate some of my time to her.
Okay.
An additional few minutes. Okay.
Right. Good morning.
Please introduce yourself. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Coleman. I'm a practicing attorney, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minneapolis-based law firm Coleman Law & Consulting. My focus today is on the goal of HF 3396 to ensure that all Minnesota employees, and particularly women, have private and safe workplace restrooms. For as long as employment relationships have been regulated by the government, bathroom use has always been based on biological sex, which has never been deemed by Congress, by the Minnesota legislature, any controlling federal court, or the Minnesota Supreme Court to discriminate against gender-confused people. Both the historical and current state of the law on this matter are very clear. Allow me to summarize. Let's start with federal law. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits discrimination in the workplace based on a person's race, color, sex, religion, and national origin. Congress has declined numerous requests to add gender identity as a protected class. Unfortunately, now the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is trying to circumvent the legislative process by calling single-sex bathroom policies discrimination based on Title VII's protected class of sex, and is suing Minnesota companies for this. It's important to note first that the federal courts agree with Congress's plain language in Title VII. The Eighth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, which is the controlling federal circuit here in Minnesota, has said that where a gender-confused employee claimed discrimination and hostile work environment because he was denied use of the female restrooms, confirmed that this is not discrimination, it does not create a hostile work environment, and it is indeed necessary to protect female employees' privacy. Other federal courts agree with the Eighth Circuit. The Seventh Circuit has said the phrase in Title VII prohibiting discrimination based on sex in its plain meaning implies that it's unlawful to discriminate against women because they're women, men because they're men. The words of Title VII do not outlaw discrimination against a person who has sexual identity disorder. Even the liberal Ninth Circuit agrees with this holding. In state law, just like federal law, both Minnesota statutes and Minnesota courts have clearly stated that it is not discrimination to assign bathroom use based on biological sex. The Human Rights Act says that employers may not discriminate against employees' use of facilities in the workplace based on sexual orientation, which in Minnesota includes gender identity. But it also then says that this does not apply to public restrooms and locker rooms. The Minnesota Supreme Court has interpreted this very statute in the Minnesota Human Rights Act in the employment context. This case also involved a gender-confused employee alleging discrimination and hostile work environment, this time under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, because he was refused access to the women's restroom. The court held, quote, an employer's designation of employee restroom use based on biological gender is not sexual orientation discrimination in violation of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So why doesn't the law give access to gender-confused people to the restroom of their identified gender? Well, there are two main answers. employees' constitutional right to privacy, and the fundamental safety. Privacy. The Constitution's right to privacy under the 14th Amendment is undisputed, and the Eighth Circuit says that shielding one's unclothed figure from the view of strangers, particularly strangers of the opposite sex, is impelled by elementary self-respect and personal dignity. Federal courts have upheld this right for both men and women. One federal court held that allowing women access to male restrooms would cause such embarrassment and increased stress in men that some wouldn't even be able to urinate. They found this privacy right extreme. Another court held that this invades the individual most fundamental privacy right, the privacy to one's own body. In fact, even prisoners enjoy this right. Multiple federal courts have ruled that prisoners have the right to use bathrooms and changing areas outside the view of the opposite sex. And the Minnesota Supreme Court has even recognized a private right of action in tort for invasion of privacy. In addition to protecting employees' privacy, the law seeks to protect the safety of all people in intimate settings like bathrooms, especially women. Anyone can claim to be transgender, even sexual predators who are not, in fact, transgender. 1 in 5 U.S. women are the victims of rape or attempted rape. 1 in 6 are the victims of stalking. 68% of sexual assaults are never reported to the police, and 98% of rapists will never spend a day in prison. Inviting men into women's bathrooms puts women and girls at risk of sexual assault. So why HF 3396? If both federal and state law are clear about the proper meaning interpretation of both Title VII and the Minnesota Human Rights Act, why do we need this law? Because the EEOC is attempting to circumvent the law and the courts and is suing Minnesota employers right here who uphold the privacy and safety of employees in their workplaces. Less than 3 months ago, the EEOC issued a press release applauding a settlement it reached with the Deluxe Financial Services Corporation based right here in Shoreview, Minnesota. The EEOC sued Deluxe, claiming that Deluxe violated Title VII's ban on sex discrimination, which the EEOC says includes a denying gender-confused people use of the opposite-sex bathroom. The EEOC bases its position on its own commission's rulings in two administrative, not judicial, but administrative cases finding sex discrimination under Title VII includes gender identity. This, of course, flies in the face of the Federal Circuit's binding precedent, as well as Minnesota law and our Supreme Court precedent. So the EEOC is pursuing employers, Minnesota employers, who uphold the safety and privacy of their employees in bathrooms, calling it sex discrimination. Of the many things involved in that settlement, in addition to having to pay $115,000, Deluxe is now required to annually train all employees and teach them that unlawful sex discrimination includes gender identity discrimination as a protected class, even though Congress, the Eighth Circuit, Minnesota law, and the Minnesota Supreme Court say it does not. Who is the EEOC that circumvent Congress, this Minnesota legislature, and both controlling federal and Minnesota courts? Well, let me explain briefly the role and powers of administrative agencies. They serve at the pleasure of Congress. The EEOC was created by Congress in 1964 as part of Title VII. Now, Congress can delegate some of its powers by establishing administrative agencies, but as an administrative agency, the EEOC is never, ever allowed to regulate beyond the powers that Congress grants it. Neither is it allowed to issue rules that contradict statutes that Congress has enacted. But this is exactly what they're doing. Of the 26 congressional enactments and orders the EEOC enforces, not one of them allows them to change the meaning of Title VII's ban on sex discrimination to include gender identity. And our Eighth Circuit Court has rejected this inclusion of gender identity, as previously noted. And yet, despite all of these rules of law, here we have the EEOC forging ahead with its own will, pursuing Minnesota companies for sex discrimination, when all these employers are doing is providing safe and private bathrooms for their employees. Apparently, the EEOC thinks that Minnesota employees have less rights of privacy than are afforded prisoners under the law. This bill is necessary because Minnesota employees are being sued for protecting their employees' privacy and for providing safe bathrooms. This bill will clarify that not only may Minnesota employers provide safe and private workplace restrooms, they must do so. This bill will make it clear that both sexes, particularly women and children, have legally protected rights to safety and privacy in areas reserved for private bodily functions. This bill does not single out any group for discrimination. It simply requires that everyone follow the same rules. No one group should have special rights carved out for them that violate and strip the rights of others, especially those of women and children. What is in the head of individuals suffering from gender confusion about their identity, gender identity, doesn't change what everyone else sees in their exposed bodies.
HF 3396 is timely. Minnesota employers need this legislature to act. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, and my last testifier is Ann Taylor. Just one quick follow-up to her testimony. In your packet, there's articles where sexual predators have used the gender identity based on feelings, defense, in going into women's bathrooms. And in this particular case, they were arrested. So for additional information, you can look in your packet.
Okay. Thank you. And this is your final testifier?
Yep.
Thank you. Please go ahead. State your name.
Ann Taylor, and I am here as a parent today. I am the mother of two children, both a teenager and a preschooler, who is very much in support of these bills. A little over a year ago, I was with my youngest child at a swim facility called Foss Swim School, where I encountered the use of changing rooms in which there is zero separated, specifically male and female changing facilities available at the St. Louis Park location. When I approached the front desk at the newly remodeled facility, I asked where the women's changing rooms were located. The employee said that they were now all one. Confused, I inquired where and how people change their clothing in this new space. I was then told that there are no designated male or female stations. Instead, there were individual stalls for privacy in one large open space. I recall asking, "So, my child and I have to change clothes next to someone of the opposite sex? I do have two girls. That doesn't seem right, and I don't think I'm comfortable with this." The employee behind the desk did not apologize, follow up, or explain anything else as I headed into the big room with my youngest child in tow. Upon entering the space, there were men, women, and children inside this large changing area. There were approximately 15 individual changing stalls, of which approximately 1 to 2 inches exposed both above and below for regulations, because it's a swimming facility, enough to slide a smartphone through. And while there are separate changing stalls and private bathroom accommodations for the handicapped, there are no accommodations for separate sexes. I expressed my concern as well as disappointment that myself and my child would be required to change in and out of a bathing suit alongside other adults of the opposite sex. My oldest child's response, "If I had to change in a place like that, I would ask you to take me out and not come back." I just have a few more sentences.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. Young developing girls as well as boys are in need of privacy as well as dignity. And I feel the new layout at this particular location and other locations throughout the metro area do not accommodate for that at all. Upon speaking directly to owner John Foss, it was clear that staff, construction crews, and state laws do not consider this during a remodel phase. The experience brought about concerns for safety and children and families as the new changing site appears to be a free-for-all during full sessions with so many people coming and going all in one large room. While I did note a female employee wandering in and out of the facility, I wondered what her role was and for what purpose. What if it had been a male employee? These kinds of changing facilities go against our family values, in that my children will not be conditioned to thinking that these types of accommodations are the new norm. It is increasingly difficult for people to maintain their right to privacy while businesses are being bullied into utilizing blended gender locker rooms and opening women's bathrooms to men.
Please conclude.
I find these kinds of accommodations unhealthy, both mentally and emotionally, while not only violating the privacy of children, but exploiting them, including adults, by choosing to host one-room-only changing sites.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Grunhagen?
I think you've got 2 minutes left.
Maybe one.
One, okay. I just want to make a couple comments, Madam Chair.
Okay, quickly, please.
Just to reiterate, in your packet, there's verification of articles regarding the comments that were made here. Again, the Minnesota Department of Education, which is, to me, very disconcerting, is promoting gender-bred curriculum into our Minnesota schools down to the elementary level. There's an article that confirms it's in kindergarten, causing confusion. There's also expert testimony in your packet that says this confuses children and has a negative effect on them when they promote that a child has to decide at an elementary level whether they're a boy or a girl. Again, my bill is based on an objective standard, something we can all agree on. It is not based on feelings, which is unfortunately what the gender fluidity policy is based on. The other thing, this is not about discrimination. I think you've heard the testimony legally, federally and state, and yet the Minnesota Department of Education is using that narrative to try to force schools to pass gender inclusion or gender fluidity policies, and that's a false narrative. And it's one of the reasons I thought this informative meeting was necessary. The last thing I'd say, I have a school district in my district that has a transgender student. The student uses private single stall facilities. They're fine with that. They don't want to cause problems. And I think that's a reasonable compromise. I've talked to the superintendent. Everybody's fine with that, okay? But what we're talking about here is forcing biologically opposite sex people into multiple use at the same time, showers, dressing rooms, and restrooms. And I think that sets us up for a lot of problems down the road, including the constitutional violation of privacy and public safety. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Okay, the first testifier I have, Representative Barbie Russo.
Madam Chair.
Taking questions from members
this,
after.
Well, this is kind of important because he just referenced this gender-bred person and seemed to indicate that it came from the Commissioner of Education. I see no recitation on where this particular piece in his packet came from. And is this from the state of Minnesota, Department of Education? Because there's nothing on here to say that.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you for that question, Madam Chair, Dan, Representative Schoen. This was given to me by a person who teaches continuing ed classes to teachers in the public school. One of those teachers gave this to the to that individual, our name's Barb Anderson, and said that their school district wants them to promote this curriculum into their elementary grades. This was also done to the fact that the same teachers, there were six of them and they all confirmed it, that they had been told by their school district based on Minnesota Department of Education policy that they needed to promote this curriculum into the school district.
Thank you. Representative Russo, go ahead and please keep your comments to 2 minutes as close as you can.
Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Barb Russo. I come here wearing two hats today, one as a representative that's been involved on this issue in the past, and secondly, as the mother of a transgender person. First of all, as the representative, this is not a good bill. Representative Grunhagen claims that he's got objective standards, but there is no such thing in this bill. He says a person's sex is either male or female. That is not actually strictly true. Last year I gave you about 15 minutes on that on the floor on the existence of intersex people. I will leave some of that to Dr. Catherine Spencer. I think she might be addressing some of that. And as biologically defined is the phrase, it's absolutely vague. There's nothing, it doesn't define itself. What do you mean? Do you mean chromosomes? Do you mean anatomy? Do you mean hormones? Do you mean brain structure? Nothing is defined in this. There is no objective standard in this bill. The enforcement of this would be impossible in public accommodations, unless you're going to put a TSA-like scanner to identify people's anatomy. If you're going to be inquiring about people's medical status, you would be violating HIPAA regulations. So it would be absolutely unenforceable in public accommodations. We've heard a great deal about the bill's attempt to deal with fear of harm. No instances of actual harm have been cited. No actual harm has been cited. No one has been hurt in all of the examples that have been given. Voyeurism is already against the law. Taking cell phone pictures of people in locker rooms is already against the law. Even having your cell phone in a locker room in a school is already against school regulations in most places. I'm assuming that Representative Grunhagen has bought the best evidence he could find in the nation and yet has brought no cases in which a person was attacked or physically hurt under these circumstances. Fear does not equal danger. And people, the whites-only bathrooms were justified by fear and privacy concern. and all of these same arguments. As a mom, I am afraid for my son's safety. Needing to pee is a basic biological need. If my son can't go to the men's room with his beard, he's not going to be able to go to the women's room with his beard. This bill treats my son like a dog because he can't pee inside at a public accommodation. This bill puts people at risk of being targeted, beaten up, and killed. That happens every year to transgender people in this country. This bill tells transgender people, you don't have a place in our society. We're not even going to let you pee. You don't have a place in our society. You don't have a place in our restaurants. You don't have a place in our jobs. You don't have a place in our schools. And that puts people at risk. Because the psychological risk of being transgender is about not having a place in society. And I'm here today primarily so that there's people that know somebody's standing up for them and telling them, yes, you do belong. You've got a place in society. You've got a place in a job. You've got a place in a restaurant. You've got a place in my home. And don't let anybody tell you you don't. Thank you.
Next, Teresa Nelson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony. Please try to keep it to 2 minutes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Teresa Nelson and I'm legal director for the ACLU of Minnesota. We oppose this bill because it's an anti-LGBT measure that is far-reaching and would make it impossible for transgender men and women to go about their daily lives in our state. Forcing transgender people into the wrong restroom is sex discrimination that violates the Constitution's guarantee of equal protection and federal laws like Title VII and Title IX. Now that puts the state at risk for losing all of its education, federal education funding, and it also puts employers and schools at risk of liability as well. Codifying this type of anti-trans policy also contributes to the harassment and violence that transgender people are forced to navigate every day. Minnesota has had a law banning discrimination based on gender identity since 1993. These important protections have not led to any increase in safety concerns in restrooms and locker rooms in our state. Now, bills like this have been advanced based on the myth that gender identity protections will enable non-transgender men to gain access to women's restroom by pretending to be transgender women. This just doesn't happen. It's simply a myth that has served to justify and perpetuate discrimination and violence against the transgender community for years. When it comes to the harm to transgender individuals, House Bill 3396 is even more extreme than House Bill 2, the law that was recently signed by North Carolina Governor McCrory. House File 3396 puts the most vulnerable among us at risk of discrimination, harassment, and violence, and that is simply unacceptable and inhumane. Transgender people are used to being told that they don't belong and that others need to be protected from them. But instead of fighting back against that discrimination, bills like House File 3396 are contributing to it. It's time for all of us to embrace the humanity of our transgender community members by rejecting hateful rhetoric and legislation based on that rhetoric. I respectfully urge you to oppose House File 3396.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Reverend Dwayne L. Davis, and after that, Monica Meyer. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
Please state your name for the record. Go ahead with your testimony, and do try to keep it to 2 minutes. Thank you.
Dwayne Davis. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on what I consider to be a misguided and wantonly cruel piece of discriminatory legislation that is beneath the dignity of this distinguished body. I am the pastor of All God's Children Metropolitan Community Church, and I want to tell you more importantly, I am the 15th child of the late Reverend Burkett Davis and Delcia Davis, who started their family and life together as sharecroppers in Jim Crow, Mississippi. My parents worked many years to make sure that I would not know the terror and violence of those years, and they rarely spoke about the hate and discrimination, but the memory of one particular act of discrimination could not so easily be forgotten, the whites-only sign for restrooms. Those were the things that they could not forget, and they told me about them. It was the most visible sign to them that their government would not protect them and that they were vulnerable to the worst kinds of violence that if they visited the wrong facility. This, I fear, would be the impact of this legislation. Make no mistake about it. You will be relegating the most vulnerable people among us to second-class citizenship, but I guarantee you, you will also be encouraging violence. If you pass this bill, you will be sanctioning not only discrimination in the public square and the economic marketplace, you will also be signaling to the majority that it need not concern itself with the rights and interests of vulnerable citizens. As the pastor of transgender Minnesotans, I have heard that they are the ones who fear the bullying, the assaults, and the violence. You have an opportunity to show all Minnesotans that all Minnesotans are important to us. Defeat this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Monica. And on deck, Bill Duran. Okay, the pages will come and get whatever you have there.
Great. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, committee. My name is Monica Meyer, and I'm the Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota, and we work for achieving equity for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, and queer Minnesotans. I'm very pleased to be here today. We strongly oppose House File 3396 for many, many reasons. Transgender Minnesotans have legal protection from discrimination for over 20 years in our state as a part of the Minnesota Human Rights Act, passed in 1993. In fact, we actually led the country by providing these protections. In 2001, the Minnesota Supreme Court, in a case known as Gones versus West Group, held that the Human Rights Act did not guarantee transgender people who had not had gender confirmation surgery, the ability to use restrooms associated with their gender identity. Outfront Minnesota disagreed then and still disagrees with that part of the Gones decision. However, the Gones decision went further and stated that the Minnesota Supreme Court held that the Human Rights Act does not bar employers or others from allowing people to use the restroom based on their gender identity, irrespective of whether or not they've had gender confirmation surgery. For 15 years, employers and others throughout the state have had the discretion to allow transgender employees, customers, and others to use the facilities appropriate to their gender. And for over 15 years, more and more employers and others have exercised that discretion wisely, treating transgender people with the respect they deserve. We are unaware of a single instance in these 15 years of problems arising from the operation of the law, other than those problems inflicted on transgender people by employers and others. If there is a problem here to be fixed, it is the lack of legal requirements for employers and others to properly accommodate transgender people. I'll conclude by saying that there are, I think that what we need to do is actually have more legal protections in place that really promote inclusion in our state. And we will face lawsuits if we do go forward with a legislation like this.
Thank you for your testimony. Roxanne Anderson? Phil.
I'm going to step in for Phil. My name is Kate Crow.
Okay. So go ahead and state your name for the record and continue on. And after that, we have Roxanne Anderson and Dr. Catherine Spencer.
My name is Catherine Crow. I'm a lawyer. I work in St. Paul, Minnesota. I am not a rapist, and I am not a pedophile, and I am not a child molester. And this bill would require that my employer bar me from using the bathroom. Not simply that I wouldn't really be allowed to use the bathroom. This bill would require that my employer take action, barring me from using the bathroom at work. I have been harassed on the street. I have seen an increase in suicidal ideation. I've seen an increase in harassment, and I've seen an increase in violence against trans women since these bills began to be introduced in state legislatures. This is an all-out assault on women like me. We are pictured in full-page ads. We are promoted, we are pictured as men. We are pictured as men who seek to rape little girls. And you can only imagine for me what it's like to step out my door each day and think that a certain number of people are going to read me as a trans woman. And of that percentage of people, some people are going to feel comfortable verbally attacking me, and some people are going to feel comfortable physically assaulting me. And as these bills, just simply the introduction of these bills into state legislatures, increases that violence, increases that rhetoric, that hate against us. We deal with suicide rates that are nearly 1 in 50. We deal with suicide attempts that are 41% trans people. Nearly 60% of trans women try to kill themselves. I first tried at 9. I want to live my life. And this guy wants to call me a rapist so that he can win some seats at the state and national level. And that is not okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I just respond?
Representative Gruenhage, I think you can respond to that.
There's nothing that I'm claiming that all transgender people are rapists or child abusers or anything else. It's just that when you allow the use of opposite-sex bathrooms, which has been recognized state and federal laws and legal decisions, you give the green light when you put a standard out there of feelings for people who are sexual predators to use that argument of feelings to justify the entrance of opposite-sex facilities, showers, dressing rooms, and restrooms. As far as no documentation, I've provided documentation in your packet of articles where this has happened. Again, we're not claiming all transgenders are this way, but you're giving the green light without an objective standard of biological sex, XX or XY, to use feelings as a reason for sexual predators to enter opposite-sex bathrooms. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And in future testimony, if we could refrain from personal attacks of any kind, that would be much appreciated. Roxanne Anderson, and on deck, Dr. Catherine Spencer. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, committee, for hearing me today. My name is Roxanne Anderson, and I work for Outfront Minnesota as the Transgender and Racial Justice Director. I'm the board chair of the Minnesota Transgender Health Coalition, and I own a business. I am one of the folks that the Minnesota Department of Education consults with in training people to understand transgender individuals. We've heard lots of testimony today, and even the opposition has stated transgender people are not a threat. I also want to state for the record that, as far as I know, there is no such thing as sexual identity disorder. We now might identify people who have some gender dysphoria, and Dr. Spencer can talk a lot more about that. We use tools like the genderbread person. We also use tools like HIPPO that was designed by transgender students to talk about gender fluidity. We used to use a symbol that many folks love called Gumby. And we used Gumby because Gumby's flexible and pliable. And Gumby also is the color green, the color that we often use when people are in womb and we don't know if their gender is going to be male or female. Section 1 of this bill asserts that sex is neither male nor is either male or female, and the representative just talked about biological sex as being XX or XY. We know that there are variations to chromosomal makeup, and XX and XY are not the only two. I leave you with, as a business owner, this bill would be impossible for me to to enforce, not only for the patrons that come into my business, but also for the many transgender employees that I employ. Thank you. I oppose this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Dr. Catherine Spencer is next, and then Rhea Rowe. Hope I have that. Rhea or Raya? Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, good morning. My name is Katie Spencer, Catherine Spencer, Dr. Catherine Spencer. I am an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota Medical School. I work in the program of human sexuality, and I'm the transgender health services coordinator. I don't actually have time in 2 minutes to actually do all the education that would be required to talk about the complexity of gender and sexuality, but I do want to make the point that the packet, I had an opportunity to review the packet that you all have been, that you received, and that it grossly misrepresents the current literature and empirically validated research that we have on gender and sexuality. So some of the things that have been talked about today, actually, sexual identity disorder is not a diagnosis in the DSM or the ICD-10, which are the current medical and psychological standards. And so if I had time, I would talk to you more about like what gender dysphoria is, like the difference between gender identity and gender expression and sexual orientation. But I would hope that if you all need some education about that, you would seek that out. And that's actually why this bill is, I think, a little short-sighted. The testimony presented today has been inflammatory, in my opinion, and also misrepresents the hard work and thoughtful application of inclusive gender policies by schools and employees that I've worked with many schools and employers, and they're trying very hard to apply these things well. So I just feel like people are sort of making some broad statements about that. The other point that I wanted to make as a mental health professional, that this type of hate-based legislation has been shown to increase rates of depression and anxiety, not to mention inflaming and increasing risk of suicidality in the LGBT population. I think that as a mental health professional, I think this legislation is reductive, it's misinformed, it's fear and hate-based, it's divisive, and frankly, in my opinion, it's unethical and harmful. I would greatly urge you not to pass this bill. Thank you
for your testimony. Rhea Rowe, and then Remy Corso, and we do have 10 minutes left for the opposition testimony. Please state your name for the committee, and go ahead with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Raya Rowe, and I'm a civil rights commissioner and community organizer based in the city of Minneapolis. Today, I come to you speaking as an individual about my experience with bathrooms. When I was in college, my friend and I went to a restaurant downtown for drinks. Midway through our conversation, we realized that we both had to use the restroom. Not wanting to lose our seats at the bar, she went first, and upon her return, I politely excused myself. As I made my way to the hallway in the back where the bathrooms were located, I was stopped by a member of security who demanded to see my identification. Halfway in a state of shock, I handed over my driver's license with a capital F on it and waited as he scrutinized it. After what felt like an eternity, he handed it back to me and informed me that it was because they were cracking down on that sort of thing. Rather than trying to salvage the rest of my evening, I found myself instead heading towards the back door with blurry eyes and into the alleyway where I began to sob. I had been stopped not because I had acted in any sort of way, not because that person knew who I was, but rather because I was transgender. More importantly, my human right to access a public accommodation had been suspended, taken into the hands of a person who may very likely wish that my kind of human didn't exist. My kind of human does exist. I have the right to exist, to present as I wish, to be called what I like, and I have the right to use the bathroom. It did not matter if I were to go in the men's room or the women's room that night, the message would have still been the same. Get out of our non-transgender spaces. We all live in community, and we have a responsibility to interact with each other, to know each other, to have conversations with each other, not about each other. I invite you to join the transgender conversation and get to know who I am.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairperson and committee members. My name is Remy Corso, and I prefer to be addressed by the pronouns they and he. I hold a degree in gender and sexuality studies from the University of Minnesota. Both locally and nationally, I have researched and trained on issues of sex and gender for almost 9 years, including regular guest lectures in the University of Minnesota College of Biological Sciences. My purpose is to highlight some neglected scientific truths upon which individuals, parents, educators, and our legislators can base real, sound decision. From a researcher's perspective, I'm intensely concerned about proposed legislation which focuses on and devotes state funding to discussing the private realm of our genitals. It is time to recognize the complicated truths about bodies and genitalia, as noted by Representative Yarusso, because that is, medically speaking, the topic of HF3396, since external genitals are the majority of the time the singular sign used to determine one's sex at birth, when in fact a whole symphony of components goes into the makeup of human sex. Within the groups of bodies which were coercively assigned at birth the F of female or the M of male, there is actually more quantifiable diversity than there is between the archetypal female and male body as such. Let that sink in. There is wider diversity within the entire group of people labeled female at birth than there is between our stereotypical ideas of what is female and what is male. When precious baby humans are born, they aren't also easily sorted into the categories of female and male either. According to renowned expert Dr. Alice Dreger in the Intersex Society of North America, the term intersex refers to relatively common anatomical variations from the standard female and male types. And just as skin and hair color vary along a wide spectrum, so does sexual and reproductive anatomy. Intersex is neither a medical nor a social pathology. At least 8 new people in the U.S. each day, in fact, present so noticeably atypical genitalia that a specialist in sex differentiation is called to consult with their parents. Estimates vary in the range of 1 to 1,500 to 1 in 2,000 births, which some have read off as rare until they learn that this frequency approaches twice the rate of people born with cystic fibrosis, comparable only because CF is also tracked at birth and not because the two are similar. And that number only accounts for those 8 infants each day whose external genitals cause a hospital to take note, while studies suggest that even more naturally diverse intersex people may not learn of their anatomy until puberty or much later in life, if at all. I wonder who will pay for the other 90-some percent of us who have not been genetically stereotyped to be tested for our chromosomal makeup. Thank you.
Thank you. Allison Yoakum and David Edwards.
Good morning. My name is Allison Yoakum, and I'm here representing Transforming Families Minnesota. We're a peer-led support group for transgender youth and their families. We have over 250 members across the state. House files 3395 and 96 are, at worst, motivated by hate and transphobia, and at best, motivated by fear, relying on what-if scenarios based not on any existing public health and safety concern, but instead on speculative fear-mongering rhetoric. It makes as much sense to legislate where transgender people can use the bathroom as it does Republican lawmakers, because more Republican lawmakers have been arrested in bathrooms than transgender people for inappropriate acts. The sponsors of these irresponsible bills promise safety for citizens by barring transgender people using the bathroom of their affirmed gender, yet there's no credible evidence that this risk exists. But today I'm not here to talk about hate, transphobia, and fear. My motivation is love. Love for my child and all transgender youth I've come to know as part of transforming families. Children who are brave and fierce and stand up to the world and say, this is who I am. Love for the members of the transgender community who have fought for decades to be recognized as who they truly are. They are not predators. They are not misguided. They are not confused. Transgender individuals are executives at corporations, PhD candidates, leaders at youth crisis centers, librarians, baristas, students, children, and human beings just like you and me. I am motivated by love for Minnesota, the nation's first state to enact civil rights laws to protect transgender individuals from discrimination. By opposing this legislation, this legislation. By stopping this regression into potty policing, constituents of this great state will be able to say with strength in their voices, I am proud to be Minnesotan.
Thank you. To equal the timeout, the opposition has 3 minutes left, so we're probably not going to get to everybody's testimony. So if you want to go ahead,
sure.
State your name for the record, and the last testifier today will be Kaya Concepcion.
Good morning. My name is Dave Edwards. My family has been legally represented over the last 6 months by the wonderful organization Gender Justice. This last school year, I was forced to advocate for my child's needs at Nova Classical Academy, a public charter school in St. Paul. My daughter is intelligent and kind. She is an amazing musician with a beautiful voice. She loves being a big sister. She also identifies as a transgender girl, and she's perfect. After a drawn-out and demeaning 6 months of back and forth with Nova, we were forced to withdraw her from school at the end of February when the administration couldn't guarantee her safety. On March 24th, our family filed a charge on her behalf alleging that she was discriminated against based on her gender identity and expression through the St. Paul Office of Human Rights. Bathroom hysteria greatly contributed to the discrimination our family experienced. A lot has been said about safety this morning. This bathroom bill would put my daughter in danger. Legislation like this greatly impacts her safety at school and in the community. Now, I also see the buttons that say no boys and girls restrooms and have heard testimony about the sexual exploitation of women and girls. The difference between their concerns and mine is that the danger my daughter is facing is actually real. This threat to her safety doesn't require the creation of an imaginary or fictitious predator or hold up cisgender men who commit crimes as examples. While there has not been one documented case in the United States of an actual transgender person doing anything but meeting their biological needs in public restrooms, 70% of transgender and gender nonconforming people are assaulted or harassed in public restrooms. My wife and I are up at night thinking about this situation, worried that our daughter will be one of these statistics. I identify as a cisgender man, and my story is only one parent's experience in a much larger community that affirms, supports, and accepts the broad spectrum of gender identities and expressions in Minnesota. I don't presume to represent anyone else's experience but my own. I challenge each of you to meet with a parent of a gender-variant child, a transgender student, and a transgender adult in your offices. Make sure you are speaking with and seeking out diverse voices of a diverse representation of racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic perspectives. Ask them how they would like to be treated. Ask them about the harm that even the discussion of this legislation is causing, and ask them what they need to feel safe. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And our last testifier is Kaya Concepcion. All right, so. Okay, this will be our last testifier. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Hi, I am Andrew Stewart from South High.
Go ahead with your testimony.
I was forced to use the female's bathroom and in a YMCA. I walked in and was getting ready to change, and a woman was scared and she ran out to the staff desk and came back and said I did not belong there. And she felt violated because I was in there. And he wants us to go in our biological bathrooms. I am transgender. I was in a facility and I was forced to use a female's bathroom because that's where I had to be. And she thought I was going to hurt her when really I was just trying to change because I'm biologically female and that's where he wanted me to be. How did she feel? She felt violated. And I'm only 16. I think this is idiotic to have this bill when I'm just trying to live my life and be free to be who I am and not confined and secluded in a world that is not mine. I want to live my life how it's supposed to be, not how he wants it to be. I'm a person just like every single one of you, just like him. And I want to live. I don't want to be in a mental hospital because I want to use a bathroom. I'm depressed every single day because I can't even use the bathroom that I want to use. I've been in residential for 4 years and I just got out not.
Thank you for your testimony.
We will now close the public testimony portion of the committee hearing and open up.
A few more people under this.
But we've given equal time to both sides. Thank you. We're going to open it up for member questions. First on the list, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Grunhagen, I pulled up on the question about this sexual violence, the cost of sexual violence in Minnesota. Do you have any statistics that show that after that 2001 court decision, there was an increase in harm to anyone for any reason in bathrooms or otherwise on account of transgender folks?
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Blast. I tried to get a retired police officer from the metro area who Representative Schoen might know, and he's retired now. He lives in my district, to get that information together. He had a major conflict today, and he did not forward that to me. So I do not have that information.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grunhagen, the question has come up as to enforcement. How do you plan that, how would you guess that this law be enforced?
Representative Grunhagen.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh. I had the retired Metro police officer during his career did make several arrests in public accommodations, including restrooms, based on somebody filing a complaint. And when the complaint is filed, they, especially on a repetitive basis, they would set up a situation where they could experience the type of harassment or sexual intimidation that is being alleged by victims in some of the public restrooms with multiple stalls. And according to him, the arrests were made, people were charged, they pled it down to disorderly conduct, and the case was concluded. Now, if the person stopped the behavior and it wasn't repetitive, then that was the end of the case. If it continued to be repetitive, the charge could be increased. And again, this individual is a retired police officer from the metro area. He again had a conflict with coming here today to testify. And that was his testimony. So basically, somebody files a complaint, and the complaint is the security or law enforcement, and proper action is taken, just like any other complaint.
Well, Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, on the line, I think two sections of the bill, in fact, 2.14 and 2.23, you say no public school or university shall permit. And yet there is no enforcement provisions regarding due process or anything else. And when we at the legislature mandate regulation and then do not provide a regulation mechanism, what happens is that you get mob regulation by mob. And the reporting is essentially tattletale reporting. This person did that, therefore you're reporting. And I don't think that in our experience of creating laws that creates good policy at all, no matter what the subject matter. So I would have substantial concerns with that. Second, as far as how it's enforced, I mean, do we get to the point where it's as ridiculous as we have equipment checkers standing at the door and how does that work? I can just only imagine the personal privacy rights that are violated in that instance. A lot of the testifiers in support cited to their right to privacy, and I can only imagine how we're going to violate people's privacy in order to enforce this proposal. But I would say this. I think in the absence of that, Representative Grunhagen, you and I know because we talked yesterday, in the absence of any evidence for increase in reasons to be concerned, that this is a proposal based on fear. And if there are anyone else presenting this law but you, I would suggest that they were being disingenuous. I would suggest that they're doing it in order to gin up fear for political reasons. But I know you, and I know you actually believe this, okay? And I disagree with you. But in my experience, the people that we have to fear and have to create laws and regulations about, they're the people who have something to hide. They're not the people who present, readily present in a manner that doesn't fit the dominant paradigm. Those are not the people. I was asked, doesn't my 15-year-old daughter have to be concerned about, you know, people in the restroom? And I said, no. I know who she has to be afraid of. We all know who my 15-year-old daughter needs to be afraid of, if she's going to be afraid. And I would only point out this, Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen. You know, testifiers, or even not testifiers, anyone who says they're concerned about being called transphobic or discriminatory or unaccommodating, welcome to the club of how trans people feel. Because those are the folks who have been criticized far more. And I would only suggest, if you feel that way, you need to develop a tougher skin. If you're concerned about being called transphobic, develop a tougher skin, because it's the big kids' table. We're all sitting around. We need to treat people fairly. That's all I'll say, Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Madam Chair. Thank you.
Please
for
let this conversation continue. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Les, for those comments. If you have an amendment you'd like to see in those areas, I'd be open to discussing it with you. Second thing is that you know, you talk about fear, and some of the testifiers in opposition to this said that I'm hate-filled, I was accused of being a rapist, what else, I don't know. I would say if you read my emails, the people who oppose this bill use vile, filthy, not all, but in many cases, language in their emails, both to myself and Senator Newman, the author in the Senate, and are very intolerant, it seems, not all, but some, of anybody even questioning this. And my point is simply this, that when we have a Minnesota Department of Education and we have curriculum being promoted into our schools to confuse young children as to their identity, okay, whether male or female, I think we need to have a public discussion about that. And as far as my heartfelt commitment, Representative Lesh, I do appreciate your comments in that area. Because, as you well know, I did prison or jail ministry for 13 years, okay? So I spent a lot of my life caring, on a voluntary basis, caring for people in difficult situations who are less than liked by society in some cases, and I have no animosity. In fact, I tried to shake everybody's hand who testified against my bill towards any transgender person whatsoever. My commitment is that this bill would provide for the privacy and safety of gay, transgender, straight, and our children, and that we stop promoting a agenda in our schools that deliberately confuses children about their biological identity, which is assigned at birth, and that's the primary motivation behind this. And I'm all for accommodation for transgender students, like in my school district, where they've made accommodation on single stall access, whether showers, dressing room, or restrooms, so that they can have their privacy rights respected also. Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Discrimination has no place in Minnesota.
And while promoting fear and discrimination, this bill goes even further. Transgender people have human rights like the rest of Minnesotans. But in an attempt to regulate and exclude transgender people from the bathroom, you've gone way further. This would say that when I took my daughter into the men's bathroom because the long line was too long at an event, that I violated someone's human rights. Yes, it says you must not, and this changes the definition in the Human Rights Act. So any woman who has been in a long, long line that has gone into the men's bathroom should care about this bill. They should. Because what you're doing is you're saying that businesses must not permit the use of a restroom by someone who is not in the gender, in their biological restroom. In Minnesota, we have had a long history of there not being enough women's bathrooms. Women's lines are much, much longer. And so sometimes, I've even seen at a gas station, where a busload of people have pulled up and even the men have stood outside the men's bathroom so that the women can use the restroom and then all get back on the bus in a timely fashion. This would say you must not permit that to happen. I think that that's wrong. The second thing that I want to say is there's been discussion about how some folks might want to record people who are in the restroom and distribute those images. Well, in Minnesota, we actually had a court who said you have no reasonable expectation of privacy in a locker room. And if you are changing out in the open, you are free to be recorded. I actually have House File 1433 to address that issue. So even if someone of the same gender records you in a locker room, you have no reasonable expectation of privacy. That is the law today in Minnesota. So I think this bill is wrong for Minnesota. I think that this is discrimination. I think there is no place for discrimination in Minnesota, and I think it's wrong.
Madam Chair.
Representative Boonhagen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for those comments, Representative Hillstrom. I would just say I think you're wrong about that. I have especially the women standing in a long line, inaccurate. I'll use the word inaccurate. Because I have a whole list of exceptions in the bill, and one of them is a bona fide emergency, which I would say women in a long line might be an emergency situation, okay? Second thing, I have an emergency for incontinence exception in the bill. So there's a whole list of exceptions, including opposite sex parents taking a young child with them into the into a public facility, such as a restroom if necessary. Also a opposite sex caregiver for a disabled person, emergency and maintenance exceptions. So again, your characterization of the bill in these areas, I think, is not accurate, and that there's plenty of exceptions to accommodate those types of situations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Schoen. Then Applebaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a series of questions, Representative Gruenhagen. And I was wondering, you know, a lot of times bills come up, and I've carried some pretty heavy-duty bills that started out controversial and had some personal experience related to it. My curiosity is, what is your personal experience with this issue, if you can cite any stories about you personally and how you feel like you've been affected?
Representative Gruenhagen.
Madam Chair, Representative Schoen, thank you for that comment. The personal experience I've had is a constituent of mine, which I shared, if you would have been here on time, I shared in my opening testimony.
Just it's a fair assessment. I've got two kids, and I'm a single dad trying to get them to school quick.
And I understand.
I made them stand out in the cold for 10 minutes. So
and I understand that, Representative Schoen. But in my testimony, I indicated that there was a constituent lady of mine at a place of employment, and I won't read the whole testimony, that was working with a man over a long period of time who declared himself to be a woman based on feelings and decided to use the women's restroom at the place of employment. The women got very upset and distraught, and she was especially distraught and upset when she came to me at my house. And the employer said, well, we'll tape the cracks in the stalls in the women's bathroom shut so he can't see in. That didn't solve much, so now the women are having to use other accommodations for their restroom needs. Just one more follow-up. This was also confirmed at a event I was at where I sat across the table from a man who works at the same company here in the metro area, and he's from out towards my district. And he said, yeah, the man wears different types of shoes at work. Sometimes he wears female shoes, sometimes he wears male. So women look at his shoes, and depending on that particular day, on what facility he decides, they have an opportunity to use a restroom which is in closer proximity to where they actually work. So this particular individual, and by the way, the man also shared, and he had been a long-time employee, he was retired at this place of employment, that the man who claims to be a woman is also married. And when him and his wife go out, she won't let him dress up like a woman. So again, it's all feelings-based, and it's very fluid, to use their terminology, and it's causing great distress and concern by the women that work at that facility.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, I guess what I was looking at was something about, you know, in your own personal life. So I think you remember we worked on Steve's Law. We granted immunity for people calling for help when their friends were dying from a drug overdose, and we provided the antidote to it. I chief authored that bill, and I'm pretty sure you supported it because it went through here pretty well. I had personal experiences from work and seeing people die.
Yep.
And thought, boy, we got to fix something. And I got tired of seeing families go through a traumatic event. So I was hoping you would be able to relate a story in your personal life. But then, so then I'll go back to that. What kind of physical injury do you think that this will save people from? Because you talk about injury to our children or otherwise. What type of physical injury do you suspect that this will solve?
Madam Chair, again, Representative Schoen, if you'd have been here on time, you would have heard the testimonies of some of the parents with children. And
tell me, tell me what type of physical injury will this solve?
Also,
will this prevent?
Also, within your packet, I have a couple of articles of situations where sexual predators use gender identity based on feelings as a defense for when they were arrested for entering women's facilities.
Madam Chair,
and one other thing, I do have some.
Representative Gruenhagen wasn't finished.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have some personal experiences, and in the interest of time and giving other people a opportunity to also share their questions, which I can visit with you afterwards privately. When I was in the Marine Corps, okay, I dealt with down in California, San Diego, there were transgender individuals, and I did have a couple experiences with them.
Representative Schoen.
Well, Madam Chair, then, so, I mean, from a couple pieces that I heard, and when you talked about some of the handouts that you gave, it points out a lot about sexual predators and rape. I mean, do you feel that this is going to prevent rape in public restrooms and locker rooms? Is there a basis of a goal there?
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question, Representative Schoen. I think when you allow opposite-sex people to use showers, dressing rooms, and other public accommodations, it sends the wrong message to a person who has a tendency towards bad behavior towards opposite-sex people. And again, I provided documentation in your packet to that effect, where a sexual predator, Ray Witherspoon, used as his defense after entering a female restroom with young girls in it, that he used gender identity as his defense. So there is instances, I think, by allowing this and having the Minnesota Department of Education promote this in our schools, that we're sending a green light to some of these individuals to make those types of entries into opposite sex facilities.
Representative Schoen,
Madam
Chair, three people left, and we have about 10 minutes.
I recognize that, Madam Chair. I've but this is pretty important. I want to point out a couple of statistics. That sexual assault, and you had a testifier provide statistics on sexual assault related to this bill. So, obviously there's a link that some people believe that having transgender people in a bathroom is going to increase the incidence of rape. But let's...
I'd respectfully disagree with
that. Well, I'm just saying that you had testifiers point that out. So that's what I'm hearing, and I think a lot of people in the world hear that too and believe that because that causes fear. 82% of sexual assaults are caused by non-strangers. That means it's someone that you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Representative Grunhagen, I'll end with this. We believe everybody in this room are God's children, right? Representative Grunhagen, I'm going to go back to Representative Steve Simon. This is not original to me. But how many gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgender people must God create before we accept them?
Representative Applebaum.
Madam Chair, I was wondering if Representative Pinto could go first. He's got a bill up in another committee, so.
Oh, well, thank you for deferring. Go ahead, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had to miss quite a bit of the testimony because I was trying to have that hearing, have that bill be heard. But what I did hear, I want to thank the testifiers, especially the last couple that I heard, for that incredibly powerful testimony. Representative Grunhagen, I want to ask, this may have been addressed earlier, my apologies if so, but as I understand it, federal law actually requires that employers provide accommodation for transgender individuals. And is that, first of all, is that your understanding as well?
Just a moment, Madam Chair, Representative Pinto.
Yes, go ahead, Representative Grunhagen.
Do you want to respond to the question, one of the lawyers?
Can you repeat the question, Representative Pinto?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Yeah, and I don't want to get into a big back and forth. But as I understand it, the federal law does require that employers provide accommodations to individuals who are transgender, who are transitioning to...
Please come to the testifiers table if...
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Go ahead. If you could just state your name briefly again, so that for the record.
I'm sorry. Your question was whether federal law requires employers to provide accommodations.
Well, as I understand it, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission ruled recently that federal sex discrimination law does require that that a federal employee who's transitioning be permitted to use the restroom that employee is transitioning to.
Go ahead with your answer, please.
Thank you, Representative, for the question. As I indicated in my testimony, the EEOC is prosecuting certain companies. I think they've prosecuted 3 companies right now. But the EEOC is basing their interpretation of the law on their own commission's rulings. And this is outside the scope of what Title VII allows, what Congress has clearly stated, what the Eighth Circuit, which is binding here in Minnesota, has clearly ruled, what the Minnesota Human Rights Act says, and what the Minnesota Supreme Court has said. And so, no, the Equal Opportunity Commission's actions in this regard are outside of the scope of their administrative powers.
Okay.
Representative
Pinto. Madam Chair. So I do understand, though, so the commission has ruled. So right now, though, under the commission's ruling, you've got this federal requirement. On the flip side, this would impose a state prohibition. So I guess one concern I have, Representative Grunhagen, is the conflict between those two. But also, as I understand it, in that area, if an employer wants to permit their employee to use a particular restroom, all the fellow employees are fine with this. Perhaps they want to be able to hire a particularly talented employee, whatever else there is, all the sort of things that I think folks on the other side often discuss in the free market, wanting employers to be able to do this. This would, in fact, prohibit that. So it goes from a federal requirement to, in fact, a state prohibition. Is that right, Representative Grunhagen?
Representative Grunhagen, or the testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Pinto. From a legal standpoint, I'll let my attorney comment on that particular question.
Go ahead.
Currently, the state of the law says that employers have the option to designate bathrooms based on biological sex or based on gender identity access. This bill would require that all employers, do designate bathrooms based on biological sex. I think the idea being that the rights of privacy that are exalted in the Constitution and our current law
are so pervasive and so important that employers should not put employees at risk of not allowing, of not having their privacy honored in their workplace setting. And so this bill would make it a requirement for employers, in answer to your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to make sure we're really clear, though. So this would, in fact, prevent employers from both complying with a current federal requirement, one that you disagree with, but prevent them from complying, and, in fact, prevent them from making their own decision for their company with their employees as to what they want to do with respect to this transgender employee. It would, in fact, prohibit that altogether. And so that, to my mind, I just want to make sure we're clear on the effects of this, that on top of all the other aspects of unenforceability, you've got this issue of putting employers in that position.
Representative Testifier.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Representative, to be clear, the issue is that the rights of employees to a restroom at their workplace, the idea is that employers should be in a position legally to not only have the right but be required to make accommodations that are safe and private for all employees.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just one additional comment. The employer should respect the right of privacy of all individuals, whether gay, straight, transgender. And with the exceptions in the bill, I think that gives the employer the leeway to be able to accommodate that and still respect the constitutional right of privacy and safety for all his employees. Like any other constitutional right employees have, this bill would allow the exceptions where practical for the employer to accommodate.
Final question, Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I will take at face value, as Representative Lesch did, that Representative Grunhagen's concerns. We've spoken previously, and I do take at face value his concerns about safety of his family and others. I have experience, Madam Chair, prosecuting sexual violence, domestic violence, and I'm aware that, as Representative Schoen's questions were getting to, people who are transgender are far more likely to be the victims of discrimination, to be the victims of physical violence, to be the victims of sexual violence than are other people in society. And I think what we need to be doing is moving towards having more protections against discrimination rather than less. So I guess my last question, Madam Chair, then, is actually relates a little bit to a comment that was made. I guess I was out of the room, but I'd heard my understanding of the comment that what is in the head of individuals who are transgender doesn't change what other people see in their exposed bodies. And what I'm trying to understand is where I've been in bathrooms all my life. There's not a lot of exposed bodies, actually, as it turns out. So I'm just trying to understand. I'm trying to understand what exactly is the concern here, Representative Grunhagen, that causes us to, in fact, be concerned that transgender individuals who, as we heard so passionately from the final testifier, simply try to use a bathroom of that person's choice and, in fact, is in a spot of really not being able to use either one. And perhaps, Madam Chair, I'll just withdraw this as a question, but just express my deep concern that we should be doing is advancing protections against discrimination for transgender people rather than taking them away. So I do oppose the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen, we have just a couple minutes left, and we have two questioners left.
Okay, Representative Pinto, you described my bill perfectly, okay? That's what my bill does. It allows for the constitutional right of privacy and protection for gay, straight, and transgender. Your commentary fits my bill perfectly because we're trying to protect conflicting constitutional rights in a way that accommodate each group of people, okay, including transgenders. And that's what the bill does. So thank you for that wonderful commentary on my bill.
Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, our government has several very serious issues that need to be addressed, and this committee has the opportunity to address many of these issues that would not only improve the way our government functions, but the way that our society functions. Yet instead of tackling such important pieces of legislation that this committee could have heard and were properly requested to be heard, including but not limited to bills that would require a more open and transparent legislature, create policy for body cameras, protect employees' usernames and passwords from their employers, prohibit the financial exploitation of vulnerable adults, and study autonomous vehicles for people with disabilities, among several other good bills, we are sitting here today hearing this terrible bill.
Ask for order in here. We're running out of time, and we need to finish the committee time here. So please be respectful of people.
Madam Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, I just want to express that I find it incredibly disappointing, embarrassing, and sad that bills like this are the priority of this committee and this House majority. Thank you.
Well, Representative Applebaum, I don't know if you're aware, but all across the state of Minnesota, there are parents showing up in school districts today that are concerned about the privacy and safety of their children at their own schools, their own public schools. Now, that is the reason that we're having this discussion today. We were finished with our committee work. Deadlines have already come and gone. This is informational purposes only. Minnesota needs to have this discussion. And so if you think it's wasting the committee time, I guess you could have not shown up today. Representative Loma.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Gruenhagen, for bringing forth this bill. I agree with Madam Chair's statements that this is an important discussion, and a lot of points have been made, Representative Lesh and Representative Schoen, about, you know, being afraid and, you know, what kind of physical harm is going to happen to these individuals that are in these situations. I just want to tell a story. I think probably all of us have had the opportunity and have probably taken the opportunity to go to the state fair in the summer and go to the education building and sit at the House of Representatives booth and talk to folks who come by with concerns. And I just want to tell the story of the day that I was there last summer with several other of my colleagues, and a school teacher from St. Paul, from a middle school, came up to the table very distraught. She was filling out the survey, but she was very, very distraught, and she wanted to know who she could talk to, because in her experience at school, she is seeing, she says, young girls, middle school girls, go into the restrooms oftentimes to get away from boys who are harassing them. And because of the changes that we're seeing now in St. Paul School District policy, that can't be stopped. And these girls have no safe place to go. And so what do we do for these girls? And, you know, physical injury, yes, is one thing. And I don't know how we can prove emotional harm that's happening, but there was a lot of discussion today from a lot of you, emotional discussion and depression and those kinds of things. We care about all children in those situations. And so I'm so thankful that we're having this discussion today, Representative Gruenhagen. We do need to address this. And so we haven't solved it maybe today, but I'm really glad that we've had the opportunity to have the discussion. And I told this teacher that I would try to help her address this concern. So thank you very much.
Representative Gruenhagen, final comments, and then we're going to move quickly to Representative Murphy's bill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you, members. Thank you for the respectful tone by members and many of the testifiers, if not all of them, in terms of addressing this issue. I guess one of the biggest disconcerting things to me in putting this together, not only with my constituent, but to see the types of falsehoods the Minnesota Department of Education is promoting to our local school districts in terms of claiming federal and state law requires them to pass gender fluidity policies and implement curriculum that is clearly not required by state or federal law. So to see the Minnesota Department of Education promote this type of confusion to the children, and according to expert testimony in my packet, one of the experts calls it child abuse, and they've signed their name. It's the president of the College of Pediatrics. That is extremely concerning to me, and before this is totally implemented into our schools and society, I think we owe the people of the state of Minnesota a full discussion about this issue. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you,
Representative Gruenhagen. Representative Murphy, thank you for being so patient today. Representative Murphy is here to discuss House File 2371, And I understand you're part of the claims subcommittee or commission that we have?
Correct.
And if folks, if you could be really quiet while leaving, that's appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. But I, in fact, did call my superintendent when I went back upstairs and told him this discussion was going on and that he should tune in because this was a question that he asked me about when I came down. But the claims subcommittee, I thought this bill would just be able to be incorporated.
Please be quiet in the back so we can hear the testifier. Thank you. Take your discussions out to the hallway.
I thought 2371, first engrossment, would be able to be in the inserted in the claims committee report, but it seemed that it had to go its separate way, and so here we are. And it's a technical bill that changes two things in the bill, and the claims that usually were made at $500 to come to the claims committee, is we're changing it to $7,000 for medical things on sentence to serve type of claims. And for an individual to make a claim, we're changing it from $5 to $8.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And Ms. Timmons, maybe you know, when was the last time that was changed? It was at $500, now it's at $7,000. When's the last time that was changed?
Madam Chair and members, I'm Michelle Timmons, the reviser of statutes, and also here as the legal counsel for the Joint House-Senate Subcommittee on Claims.
We appreciate being here.
And yes, Madam Chair, I do not know when that figure was last changed. I do know it has been at $500 the entire 18 years that I've served as reviser.
All right, very good, very good. Any questions from members on this bill and what it does? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I have more of a comment. Last session, I had the privilege of being on the Claims Committee with Representative Murphy, and I just wanted to thank all the work that the Reviser's Office does on this bill, or on that committee. And going through the books and going through the Claims Committee, the work that they do and what's done by that committee, I believe it's a good idea to put these changes in there. It'll help relieve some of the overloaded work that they have.
Thank you. Any other member questions? I understand that you're taking this to the Claims Commission tonight, then?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Right. And then I guess the bill goes to Rules.
Okay. So do we need to pause? Okay. All right. If there are no other member questions, this will be our last committee time, as far as I know, unless something gets recalled to our committee, which has never happened. But I want to thank all the members here for the lively conversations that we've had and the good legislation that we've hopefully come out of this committee. I also want to thank Callie and Lauren and Alex and Travis and also the pages, Rachel and Mike, for their patience with us. And we'll see you around on the House floor, I guess. Thank you.
Wait,
we don't have to vote on this.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yep. We're adjourned. Thank you, folks.